From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 467, DevOps in 2015 with guest Gene Kim. Recorded Wednesday, March 2nd, 2016. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Gene Kim, and I consider him one of the godfathers of the DevOps movement. He's a multiple award-winning CTO, researcher, and author. He was the founder of the CTO of Tripwire for 13 years, and he's co-authored three books, including The Phoenix Project, a novel about IT. Don't read it for the love story. Read it for the inspiration. And DevOps and Helping Your Business Win, as well as the upcoming DevOps Handbook. Welcome back, sir.
Richard, it's so great to be here. And by the way, Happy New Year. I hope the year is going well for you.
Oh, absolutely. You know, my wife and I took a very low-key New Year's. We went and hung out with a buddy who, in his late 40s, just had a baby. And so they were, you know, literally a couple of weeks in, and we were, you know, our kids are in their 20s. So we were saying, we were more or less saying to them, don't worry, you're fine, your kid's fine, everything's fine, relax.
Oh, that's awesome.
I got to read this comment. You know, I know we're going to talk a little DevOps today, but this is a comment from show 455 just a few weeks ago with Stephen Morawski when we were talking about Chef and PowerShell and desired state configuration.
I love that guy.
He's amazing. And this comment comes from Philip DeBurco, who says, this was a great show. However, I have to say that there's still a long road to walk with configuration tools. And I think he's talking on the Microsoft side of things. We have looked at DSC recently, and while it looks promising in keeping the same configuration, two areas are lacking. Reading the initial state and the what has changed. By reading initial state, I mean that I want to point DSC at an existing server image and say, this is my golden image. And right now, I cannot do that. And it's a pity, as the current golden image is the most common way of working. The what has changed is actually the other way of looking at what DSC is doing. Right now, DSC is hashing the configuration so it can check if anything has changed, but there's no way of knowing what has changed. There might be a case where the change is actually desirable and I want to back the DSC, but right now there's no way to calculate the difference. But on an unrelated note, as we are making tons of progress in the automated IT area, the understanding of our current abysmal state sinks in deeper and deeper.
I love it. as you're talking about this, I mean, boy, it sure brings back memories. I mean, in fact, all the way back to 1991, when we were writing Tripwire, you know, to help kind of track changes against a known good state. I mean, it's just it is, by the way, so gratifying to see, you know, so much of that functionality come into, you know, DSC and the whole sort of automated configuration management tools. I mean, it's just to see that kind of integrated into how every IT pro and sysadmin and server administrator does their daily work. That is just like so freaking cool. So that's like really great, Richard.
Well, and I think Philip's got some significant points here. I mean, DSC, it's kind of a version 2 right now, and the hashing bit does have significant limitations. If I could make a plug for a past sponsor, a company called UpGuard, whose products I really appreciate, that's the product they make, is to tell you what's changed in configuration. So it works with DSC, but it gives you that secret bit of information you didn't have.
You know, by the way, what's so gratifying to me is, you know, to see just how much easier that we're making it for the people who have to, you know, maintain the integrity of these systems. You know, so the fact that we can get information from, you know, the repositories, whether it's, you know, the GitHubs or the installers and so forth, and actually get manifests of what's actually going to be laid down. And then we have this whole vibrant community that actually, you know, says, here's what's supposed to be configurable, and here's where there's no usable serviceable parts. I mean, there's this, In so many ways, I think this is just yet another validation that there's just never been a better time to be in the game than now.
And I do think there's a part of this around the whole golden image thing, which is what I'm afraid of with the golden image is that you don't really know what's in that image. Like, the true configuration is code. And I'm getting there in this sort of cloud world these days, allows me to point at a set of scripts and say, make me a server. And it just runs and everything is there.
Yep.
When we depend on images, there's some secret sauce inside that image we don't know about.
In fact, I feel like I shouldn't say this because I'll date myself so terribly, but it's never been as easy as it is now. I mean, I remember back in the day, we would actually have to rip apart the install shield things, right?
And dig through the manifest by hand through the text files.
Yeah, exactly, right? And then the MSI files would made it a little bit easier. But I think what we've always wanted is what's really kind of at hand right now, where the people who are packaging the software, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's an in-house developer or an outside vendor, we can actually characterize and tag kind of what we're actually going to lay down on disk, and then so that the IT pro doesn't actually have to do the archaeology afterwards, right? To figure out, which things, what should it look like, and two, where do really the configuration files settings live, right? I mean, that's, I think, what we all want, right? And that's how we actually do, enforce the known good state in production.
I totally agree. And hey, Philip, thank you so much for your comment. Obviously, you've kicked off a bunch of conversation I think is going to continue. And a Run As Radio mug is on its way to you. And if you'd like a Run As Radio mug, write a comment on the website at runasradio.com or via any of our social media. We post every show to LinkedIn, Google+, and Facebook. If you comment there, read on the show, we'll send you a mug. And I'm sending you a mug too, Gene, because...
Oh, man, life is good.
Yeah, it's all good.
Hey, by the way, before we... jump in. I forgot to tell you this earlier, but about a month ago, I had the privilege of going to one of the Azure Stack briefings. So,
oh, right, with Mr. Snover and Mr. Rusinovich.
Oh, exactly, right. So when I got the invite, I was pretty sure that I got it by mistake. And then I found out that, anyone who's familiar with Mr. Snover's, multi-decade body work, right, is, we hold him in the highest esteem.
Absolutely.
But then to find out that Rusinovich was there too, just made this, I was telling a friend of mine, Sam Guckenhammer at Microsoft, who's in the Visual Studio, group program manager.
Yes, I'm a big fan of Sam. He's good people.
Oh, yeah, he's great. I said, I don't care if it's a mistake or not. Even if they don't let me in, I'll be banging on the door, demanding to be let in. It was such a treat. It was such an aha moment to just see how much – you're talking about how much better life is as a someone who is an IT pro or has to actually manage stuff in production. I mean, I left away just dazzled to see what's coming. I mean, life is you can see how horrible it was before and how – good is going to get.
How much better things are getting. Yeah, but a month ago, I did a show with Clint Huffman, who's a Microsoft Premier Field Engineer, and he referenced one of Rusinovich's videos on using sysinternals to identify malware on your machine. I went back and watched this video. My goodness, this man is brilliant. Like, just his deep understanding of, here's how you find stuff out in Windows, just digging through and going, look at this. Hey, that doesn't look right over there. Let's get rid of that thing. So it's astonishing what's in that guy's head.
So, I got to meet Jeffrey Snover at the DevOps Enterprise mm-hmm. Summit last year. So, to finally hear this amazing story that was the birth of PowerShell and NanoServer, that was just incredible. And by the way, that link is available. That is, I think it's probably one of the best 30-minute talks. In fact, it's probably one of the best talks I've ever seen in my life.
Love it.
The heroic journey and the risks that he took and, just the... how savvy he was in the 8-year journey to bring PowerShell and NanoServer to birth that. But it was funny. I had actually seen Mark Rusinovich. I remember walking to ChefConf. Mm-hmm. I think it was like 2 years ago, and I had walked in late, and was in the back of the room. I'm like, wow, whoever is giving this demo is amazing. Is this like a sales engineer or? Whoever he is, he's really, really good. I'm sitting there, and I'm like, God, that looks like Mark Rusinovich. And I remember pulling his page up on Wikipedia. I'm like, yeah, that's Mark Rusinovich, but what the hell is he doing at ChefConf?
Right.
and just it was it had never really occurred to me that I was not aware of his new role inside the Azure organization. And it was just, for me, it was just gobsmacking to see someone who I had primarily associated with his work in information security, 15 years prior,
sure,
his work in SysInternals, and to see him inside of Azure, inside the whole ecosystem that cloud is creating was just, was so exhilarating. I was just, it was like to see someone else coming from information security and, be in the game. I was just, it was one of the most delightful things, that happened to me that year.
Absolutely. And it's just, it speaks to, in a year since we've last talked, a wildly different Microsoft, come so far, so fast.
And I have to say, to see Rusinovich and Snover, two masters of their craft, mm-hmm. The whole day was just a treat beyond words. That was really, really, really fun.
When we talked a year ago, you recapped a bit of the DevOps summit that you put on, which I'll include a link to. And the funny part was talking about how the dev and the ops guys, they don't have a problem with this anymore. It's more the security and the management folks that are struggling.
Well, wow, that was a heck of a prognostication. Yeah, and, I think one of the things, the decisive conclusions after DevOps Enterprise Summit 2014 was that I think there's just a lot of evidence to say that even in large complex organizations, Dev and Ops are getting along well enough,
better and better,
better and better. Yeah, and I'm not sure if I shared this, but. It was interesting that, by the demographics among the speaker population, the most common title was director of operations, followed by chief architect, followed by director of development.
Right.
And then in the attendee population was flipped, director of dev, followed by architecture, followed by director of ops. So this year, again, we had asked every speaker to end with a slide that said, here's what I don't know how to do, or here's what I'm looking for help with. And it looks very different than the 2014 demographic. So In 2014, the top problem statements were around how do I create automated testing when I have none, especially for legacy applications. It was about bridging the information security and compliance gap. Third was what do the roles and responsibilities look like for this next generation ops organization? There are a couple others, but this year, 70% of the problems stated were around, what I would categorize as, leading change. So the questions sound like, how do I take what I've learned at the DevOps Enterprise Summit and bring it back home? Right. How do I get senior leadership on board? How do I deal with stodgy conservative leadership? How do I, create my first win when I'm starved for time and resources already. I think those kind of fall into this very broad category of organizational change management. But clearly these are, the challenges that these people who are driving, DevOps style transformations are being challenged with. The other sort of really neat kind of learning for me was that of the speakers in the 2 years of DevOps Enterprise Summit, over 25% of the speakers have been promoted, some even twice.
Right.
So I think it's just amazing validation. I think that the organizations see value in what they're doing, and they're being put in roles where they're being asked to essentially go beyond what they've been doing in a small area of the organization, now make a meaningful impact to the entire organization, help elevate the state of the practice across the entire organization, spanning dev, test, and operations. So,
and that sort of speaks to this idea that, the DevOps mentality is keeping the primary values of the company firmly at the fore. And once you start manifest, I think IT special people, especially, but tech people in general, we avoid sort of focusing on the ROI side of what our business actually do. We're more on the underpinnings and we like our tech. But as soon as you start equating how technology is actually influencing the returns of the business, people started valuing you dramatically higher.
Yeah. In fact, there's a wonderful book about, these kind of disruptive, innovative efforts. And I think, DevOps absolutely is a subset of, what we call innovation efforts. And there's a book called The Other Side of Innovation by Dr. Govindarajan and Dr. Tremble. They're both Dartmouth, they're professors at the Dartmouth School of Business. And there's this wonderful phrase that describes, you know, I think what we're observing, which has, you know, those those leaders who are being elevated, everyone has confidence that they have the long-term interests of the organization at heart. So right. As crazy as they may look, as outlandish and radical as their ideas may seem, people have trust that, you know, what they're doing is actually for the good of the organization. And by the way, that actually very much reminds me of, you know, the Snover PowerShell story, sure. Right? As crazy as he seemed.
No,
right?
No, this will be good. This will be good for all of us.
And I think the end outcome, right, you know, really is recognition that, you know, he really did have the long-term interests at heart of Microsoft and the Microsoft community, and, you know, was recognized as such. So how neat is that?
Yeah, no, it's an awesome truth. And Gene, let me interrupt you for just a moment because I've got to pay the bills, because Run As Radio is brought to you by Chef, the automation platform for DevOps workflow. You can use Chef to automate and manage it all: infrastructure, runtime environments, and applications. Chef works in the cloud or in your data center, on physical servers, virtual machines, and containers. Get started with Chef today at chef.io/runasradio. So the other thing I saw you doing in 2015, and I grabbed onto this line and used it over and over again with proper appellation, was getting from unicorns to horses, which I love that, because, you know, so often the response to the whole DevOps idea is, you know, that's for magical fairy companies. And I think this might even speak to your sort of your feedback you got from the latest of your events. Was, I wonder if your audience shifted a bit, that more horse type businesses were showing up and realizing they have to sell this up, or that the sales story is a much broader sales story.
Yeah. You know, that's a great point. I mean, you know, I think there were, we had intended the conference to only be for horses, no unicorns allowed.
Right.
Meaning, we actually did invite a panel of Netflix people. You know, it was really meant to be for horses, buy horses. And, you know, and I guess for me, you know, one of the conclusions that I've come to over the last number of months is that the real value of what DevOps enables is not going to be in the unicorns, meaning the Googles and Amazon and Microsofts and Etsy's and Facebooks and so forth. It really, the value will be, the majority of economic value, I believe, is going to be in these large, complex organizations, that have been around for decades or sometimes even over a century. And by the way, I love the fact that, like, we've had Barclays Capital present, which has been around since 1649.
Right.
Macy's been around since, 1800 something, right? We had Western Union present last year. So that's a 165-year-old technology company that used to do telegraphs.
This is not just your Web 3.0 businesses here, right?
No, exactly. These are, I mean, and I think I would characterize that these are the most prominent brands in, and the most, the market leaders in almost every industry vertical. And I think the way I would substantiate that claim is of, you know, why so much value is going to be created there is that's where the technology workers are. And so we know from the benchmarking, of 20,000 organizations that we've done over the last 3 years with Puppet Labs and with Jez Humble and Dr. Nicole Forsgren, is that, you know, the high performers are about 200 times faster than their peers.
Right.
And so if we can elevate the productivity of our engineers in these large complex organizations and have that match the productivity that you would find in Google, Amazon, Microsoft, et cetera, then just think about how much economic value that is unlocked. So of the 8 million, IDC says there's 8 million developers, 8 million ops people, plus or minus, those are primarily inside the workforces of large complex organizations.
Right.
So, that is why this is so exciting to me.
Well, and I also feel like, it kind of makes sense that you see unicorns at first, because you do get the fast movers, the folks that are already well equipped to take on risk and prepared for that sort of thing, have senior buy-in. But you almost have this crossing the chasm moment, right? The Jeffrey Moore book about after those initial folks go, you're real validation of a model is when that next third, that fast follower third, comes across the chasm.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about that last year, and I absolutely still believe that. I mean, I think the unicorns really are the innovators. I think the people who are showing up at the DevOps enterprise are the early adopters, and we're really heading into the early majority. Mm-hmm. And I think what's so exciting is that I think there's just a common understanding that the business value that's created by helping elevate the productivity of dev, test, operations, even information security, really creates decisive business advantage. And the fact that not only are these people being promoted, but now there are several of these folks that they've had their team size double for the last 2 years. So I love hearing this because it just for me it's just such an interesting group of people to study because there's just this may sound over the top, but in my mind there's just no doubt, right? You fast forward the tape 10 years and these are the people who will be leading the largest technology organizations on the planet, and most likely they'll probably be leading leading the whole organization as well.
But it makes me wonder, there's a point at some point in all of this process where this just becomes operations, where this the same way that we no longer build all our own machines or rent time. Like we're headed towards this is normal process. It's not just a competitive advantage, it's an operational requirement.
Yeah, exactly right. In other words, I love that Deming quote. Change is not mandatory, but neither is survival.
Right.
The same way, I think, DevOps will eventually become the norm just because, the competitive pressures in the marketplace will make that. And by the way, I think what makes that so meaningful to me is, this is a quote from Nathan Shimmick that I use in every presentation just because when I heard it, he told me this when we were at Jez Humble's conference when he was doing FlowCon, and we were at a bar, and he told me the story, and I actually had tears well up in my eyes. He said, as a career-long ops practitioner, I have worked on every holiday, on my birthday,
right,
worse on my spouse's birthday, and even on the day my son was born, right? And the fact that there's a better way, right, it just makes DevOps just an imperative. And by the way, I was just at a large organization yesterday, and someone said, he had a picture of just last year he had to work on his the day of his daughter's wedding.
God.
I mean, the fact that this is so prevalent in so much of our common experience just I think just elevates the urgency of it's not just for competitive advantage. This is just to create humane work systems.
Yeah, it's quality of life. And folks who don't work in IT just don't understand how often we are deliberately having to work off hours. And when a crisis hits, a crisis hits.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, there's a flip side that I think it's just kind of this marvelous kind of symmetry. Tim Tischler, who for many years led the DevOps initiative at Nike, he said, as a career-long developer myself, there's never been a more joyful time in my career than when I got to write the code, push it into production myself, see the happy customer, I see this happy smiles of customers when it works and see their angry shaking fists when it doesn't work. And when he could fix his problems himself, right? He didn't have to open up a ticket. He didn't have to wait a day.
Right.
He said, not only could I fix it faster, but I would have learned something. And I think, that sort of joy gets significantly diminished over the last decade, when we can't push our own code into production anymore. And so I think it's just, how amazing is it that, DevOps not only improves life for the ops practitioners, but also increases the amount of joy and the amount of feedback they get and the quality of the feedback they get, for developers. So
yeah, it's really interesting. And it's a statement I hear over and over again, both on the dev side and the operations side, is when we're all on the same side of the problem and we're able to recognize the true problems, which is, why is this behaving this way? Why are customers doing these things? And you sort of get in that exploratory mode that, and I think I'm quoting back on one of your books, that stage three, where we're sort of synergizing on that, there's a side effect of this, which is an awful lot of joy. It becomes really fun to work on the problem. It's not that the problems go away. It's that we all seem to be on the same side of them now.
Yeah, right. And we're, I think the Phoenix Project, this notion that we're not fighting each other anymore. We are fighting a problem. We are now helping our organization achieve its goals and fighting the external enemy. I mean, that's just the there's no more fun time to be in the game, when you have that sense of teamwork where everyone's really working together to solve a common objective.
Right. And you have those aha moments, folks running into the room going, I've got an idea. I have a hypothesis. Let's work up a set of tests to try and validate this. And again, be on the same side of the problem.
Gosh, I recently, 3 weeks ago, we handed off the DevOps handbook to what they call developmental editing. So,
congratulations.
This book is so late, right? I mean, it's just, it's been, for
never
2 years.
Met a good book that wasn't late, sir.
Someone made a George R. R. Martin joke, and it really hurt. So for 2 years, I mean, there's so many things I want to do, like so many programming projects I want to tackle, but I just was so overridden with guilt that wouldn't let myself do that. So for the last 3 weeks, I've been reaching out to some friends. Reached out to Tom and Shelley, who wrote the famous system administrator book many moons ago. Mm-hmm. He has a great cloud administration book out now. He's now at Stack Exchange. In fact, isn't Murawski there?
Murawski was at Stack Exchange. He's at Chef right. now.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. All right. So they worked together for some amount of time. We were writing out, working on this program project together. I reached out to another friend at Rally Software, and we were working on Google App Scripts. And it just has blown my mind just how easily you can build things these days. I mean, just everything's available in the cloud.
Yeah.
There's all these, most things you can just find on GitHub, and you can just glue these pieces together, and it's never been easier to collaborate. Wow. You talk about work being fun.
Yeah.
It's just been a delight. In fact, I've learned so much. In fact, I did my first Google Compute Engine project on that. Mm-hmm. I did my first thing using hosted graphite. All said and done. I mean, it's just amazing how easy it is. It's just never been a better time to be an engineer.
Yeah, never been really more fun. And I think we're now seeing these tools start to emerge. And I think the containerization falls in this category and so forth of stuff that was built with this configuration as code mentality or this very explicit aspect to everything so that you can see what's going on. You know what the intent is.
Yeah, and by the way, I shouldn't call myself an engineer. I am not an engineer. that would insult every engineer out there. My primary experience has been using platform as a service like Heroku. Right. I haven't used the Azure equivalent yet, but I mean, I've been a little bit afraid of like infrastructure as a service. So Tom, got that stood up, and I was just amazed at how easy that was. It's like, wow, even the hard stuff is easy. Just so great.
Well, and it's like you've got to get these things out of the way so you can work on the really hard problems, which is really understanding what the customer needs are and how they're going to respond and how you're going to deliver it.
Yeah, exactly. And because it's so much easier to actually implement things these days.
Well,
but this is we live in an age of miracles. Sorry for gushing about this, but it's so much fun.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. And we are expected to move fast and to explore these opportunities, solve them in different ways. I look at the leap it's been over the past year. Like I've had since the previous show, we did some shows of security. They were talking about how this configuration as code mentality helped with the visibility of your security exploits. They could tell what changes have been made version to version. So they were able to respond faster, and that the better instrumentation brought stuff forward to management in a better way, that, it became a mantra across the organization to build the pipeline of value into a visible platform. Like, we solved all these things, or at least we've gotten better at them. The question is, how do we tackle this next round, and what happens next year?
Yeah, in fact, hey, there's actually one key learning that I had, mm-hmm. In this kind of month of sort of intense jumping in and working on projects. There's no, I guess the lesson I learned or got reinforced was there's the value of having the ability to reach out to friends and say, hey, would you be willing to work on this together?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in general, it requires that there's got to be some sort of common problem that, you know, is worth solving for both people, right? But the you know, I remember with Tom Limoncelli, we were talking about, like, you know, the specific thing that we wanted to do on book tracking, that he's an author, I'm an author, we wanted to build this kind of infrastructure. You know, we talked about, like, what we wanted to learn, and, you know, he said he hasn't used even though he spent 6-7 years at Google, he never used Google Compute Engine.
Right.
I was like, okay, I'm all for that. I'm like, you know what? I'd love to learn how to do Docker deploys. So we might tackle that later. But maybe just a wax philosophical form, but I remember taking this workshop at MIT about from a mentor of mine, Dr. Steven Spear. He wrote this great book called The High Velocity Edge. But there was this one moment where they were talking about learning organizations. And someone made the observation that in general, when we adults learn something, we tend to do it in private, because maybe it's not shame, but maybe it's embarrassment. So mm-hmm. It's like, if we don't know how to swim, or you know we're trying to pick up some skill, usually we try to hide the fact that we don't know how to do it already.
Sure.
And so if there's this culture, or if we have a sense of safety that, you know, everyone is a learner, then everybody can do this, that there should never be any shame in learning. And I just that was, as I learned so much in the last month, and I just got so much joy out of doing it. I just hope that everybody has the ability to have a network of co-creators and peers and co-learners, because I think that's how we get to, you know, solving the challenge that you were talking about, right? Which is, you know, how do we learn what we need to learn that's coming next?
You reminded me with that whole bringing your friends in on a project. Do you remember a time, and it wasn't that long ago, I think, where the sort of mantra was, you don't work with your friends because it's going to ruin the friendship? You know, the fact that we can move as quickly as we can, that you can have this gig mentality, let's get together, solve a problem and move on and have some success with it. If you don't start out friends, you're going to be friends at the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Jez Helmholtz's great quote is, something I can't remember who was attributed to, but there's something, you know, it's something like this. There's nothing more joyful than to be able to work on projects with friends, that are, you know, create that you can solve quickly, where you learn something and you're not tied to it forever. You
right.
have an obligation that lasts for the rest of your life. I think that is very true.
Well, a half hour has flown by as usual, Mr. Kim. Thank you so much for your time. The next DevOps Enterprise Summit is coming up.
Yeah, it's coming on November 1st, I think. In fact, I'll send
I've just looked it up. It's November 7th to 9th.
November 7th to 9th. Oh, fantastic. Yeah. And so.
And I see until this show's coming out at the beginning of March. So blind bird pricing. I love that term.
And a call for presenters will be going out sometime.
Awesome.
Before when the show goes out. So if you are part of a large complex organization that you and you are on the DevOps journey, whether it's late in the journey, whether it's in the middle or in the beginning, we would love to hear your story. Please submit a proposal for a presentation. We'd be honored to have you be a part of the conference.
And talk about a great place to expand that network and build some new friends for solving problems.
One of my favorite quotes in philosophy of life is this: you're only as smart as the average of the top five people you hang out with.
Yeah, true.
It's all about peer group. So yep. Yeah, absolutely right.
Gene Kim, thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Richard, thank you for having me, and see you soon.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.